You're listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
Hey, my friends. Welcome back to another episode here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Today is episode 247, and it's the second edition of our Norwich Wrestling Reunion Series. We will have a third edition coming up this summer. And you can check back in the archives to September for the first edition of this story. So I made my way back over to Norwich High School to sit down with Keith Evans and Tom Stoddard on this episode, two grapplers who were stars back on those early 90s teams at NHS. We are also joined today by Carl Koenig, who is a local wrestling historian, longtime official, and president of the Upstate New York chapter of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. This interview today definitely has a ton of star power, and I can't wait to learn more about the great Norwich wrestling era of the early 1990s. All right, before we jump in, let's recognize some of our special sponsors here on the Nate Lull Podcast. They include NYCM Insurance of Edmiston, Shenango Memorial Hospital of Norwich, Shindello Federal Credit Union of Franklin, Preferred Mutual Insurance Company of New Berlin, the Amphenol Corporation of Sydney, Sportsfield Specialties of Delhi. We have SFCU, Benson Agency Real Estate of Oneonta, Huff Ice Cream of Sydney, Mirabito Gresham Insurance, Certified Auto Outlet of Oneonta, Certified Financial Planner Ed Curley, Clark Sports Center of Cooperstown, New York Pizzeria of New Berlin, Waste Recovery Enterprises of Sydney, the Rinker Insurance Agency of Afton, McCready Motors in Norwich, Gavin's Pizzeria of Sydney, Superior Heating and Air Duct Cleaning, also of Sydney, the NBT Insurance Agency, Mirabito Energy Products, Macho's Tacos of Sydney, Advantage Maytag Home Appliance Center in Oneonta, JM Electrical Contracting of Bainbridge, the Franklin Railroad Museum, Springbrook, and Charles J. Houston Incorporated of Mount Upton. I know it's a long list, but our sponsors are truly good to us here on the show. All right, it's episode 247 today and the second edition of the Norwich Wrestling Reunion Series. A special thanks, as always, to our Norwich producer, Rhett Janung, for all his hard work with this project. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's interview on the Nate Lull Podcast.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawman is putting an end to my running and I'm so far from my home.
Oh, mama, I can hear you a-crying, you're so scared and all alone. Hangman is coming down from the gallows and I don't have very long.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are live again here at Norwich High School, part two of our Norwich Wrestling Reunion. This is episode 247 on my podcast, the Nate Lull Podcast. And just a reminder as well, in case you're listening to this, that you can also watch the video of this episode on the Norwich Athletics YouTube channel. Again, I've said it before, but they do a fantastic job for their student athletes of putting up videos, not only from things that are going on today with their student athletes, but looking back at the past, like this that we're doing here today. So we're very excited to bring you part two. We did have part one a while ago when we spoke with Coach K and a couple of other members of this team, but we've kind of been looking back at the early 90s of Norwich High School wrestling, specifically the 91 stack champs and the 91 section four champs. There's a lot of history with this group and the amazing things that they were able to accomplish. So today I'm joined by Tom Stoddard and Keith Evans, who are both members of that team. And Carl Koenig is here, who's kind of a Section 4 wrestling aficionado, and will have a lot of great stories for us as well here. So, Keith, I wanted to start with you. You know, we're sitting here at Norwich High School, and we're surrounded by wrestling photos. When you think about this team and this era of Norwich wrestling, what first comes to your mind? Because there's so many different angles you could take on it. But when you look back, what sticks out to you the most?
A lot of it is, for me, is as I looked at some of the photos as I walked in the room, you know, I just try to put back the memories of the people that have surrounded, you know, myself and Tom and Dan, of course, and the memories that we had and put together, because I've told even my own children that I was very, very lucky to have a great sports experience at Norwich High School. So to put back those memories and live those memories back, it's been a real cool thing to get ready for this, to do this podcast. And it's been cool. And to see some of the photos that you have set up here, that's kind of the theme for me is the thoughts and the memories that we had put together.
Tom, for you, you know, I know you're sitting next to Keith here, and he's kind of one of your brothers, you know, and we'll talk about Dan, of course, as well. But what is it for you about Norwich Wrestling when you look back on kind of a special time in the early 90s, not only a special time for wrestling, but just a special time in life for you guys to be here at NHS?
I don't think there's a day it goes by that it doesn't seem surreal. You know, when I look at the photos here, you know, I almost feel pain. The reason why I feel pain, you know, and it's funny that is, you know, it's high, you know, Keith and I have tried to tell, you know, we sound like old men now, but we try to tell kids and people who want to listen to our boring stories that how tough it was to be in that wrestling room, and in the kind of a neat thing about these group of kids back then is that, you know, as much as we went after each other in the wrestling room and picked on each other and tried to, you know, beat each other up in the wrestling room somewhat legally. but, you know, I tell you what, you know, it's a neat, it's hard to put your finger on the connection that we had. We couldn't get a more different group of kids. You know, you want to talk about diversity? Holy crow. You had rich kids, poor kids, minority, it had everything. And so it's a kind of neat thing. So when I see these pictures, those memories are not too far away from me. You know, they're always under the surface. And anybody wants to sit down for a few minutes and listen to me rattle on about them, I'd be more than happy to.
Carl, it's exciting to have you here as well, because I think this will be great to have an outside perspective of what this time in Norwich wrestling history was like, and Section 4 wrestling history. So when you think back on this time, and we were just kind of talking about it off the air, but the balance and just that no matter who was wrestling on this team, if one guy went down, it was the next guy up. You know, what are your thoughts on this early Norwich era?
Well, I think the thing that really sticks out the most in my mind is that you have to appreciate that when these three, well, unfortunately, Dan is not with us now, but when these three guys were seniors, they placed second, and fourth in the New York State Championships. And what makes that even a better, you know, story is the fact that they did it when there was only one champion in New York State, and we didn't have a Division One and a Division Two. And, you know, I officiated many matches here in Norwich, and each of them were usually very exciting and often came down to the last three wrestlers. And guess who Norwich had at those three weights? Wow, what a threesome. A murder's row.
Yeah, just the biggest thing I've learned about this team from doing my research and getting ready for this is that there wasn't any weak links. And Keith, I'll come back to you. And Coach K had mentioned this, that other coaches in the stack would come up to him and say, how did you guys win that meet? You didn't have somebody maybe that placed first, but you had guys who were consistently finishing second, third, fourth, whatever it might be. Is that what made this group truly special, is that maybe there wasn't a quote-unquote superstar, but everybody just knew their job and was willing to kind of sacrifice?
In my memories, it was just that, you know, that a lot of people who picked up, and I'll never forget when I believe it was our senior year, when we had a snow day for Shenango Fork, so it got rescheduled for a back-to-back with Johnson City, and the place was packed for Johnson City, and we won that. And I remember they had to put some TVs in the from what we had heard, that they had put some TVs in the cafeteria for people to, you know, to stand and watch because they were worried about the numbers in the gym. And that is something that I'll never forget, you know, that goes along with some other memories that I had had. But I remember that, you know, we had to do Shenango Forks the next day. And of course, making weight for me was always a unique thing. And
I have a lot of stories with that.
but I remember we got late in the meet, and it looked kind of grim, you know. And for us to make it, and we did not win that meet, and it came down to Tom and I. And I remember we were looking, and we started talking about, you know, it was over. And then, you know, we went out and we did what we could do, and it was too late to win the meet. We had lost to Shenango Forks after a big match from Johnson City the night before. But I remember in the showers after that we had reminisced about how, you know, how we had gotten to that point and where we had, you know, where we'd all come together as a team and how much everybody had, you know, partaken in getting us to that point in our league and where we had reached some success. And, you know, all we heard then was Johnson City and Johnson City. And of course, that was such a target for us, especially for Tom and I and Dan as well. And for the rest of our team, you know, that was a big thing for us. And it was special because we had a bunch of other guys in front of us, like Joe Teleski, who I remember wrestling with, you know, Keith or Kent Smith, I think it was, you know, from Johnson City. And he had had some battles to get to where he needed to be. Dan Jenkins just battled with a lot of really good wrestlers. And of course, Neil Peraza was a huge inspiration for me as we went forward. He's just a great guy to keep your head on straight. And because when you get starving, you get hungry and you get tired and you get sweating, your brain goes some wild places. But we had some great people, and it was not necessarily just the sports aspect, you know, in competing, but it was also the mentality part of providing, you know, support going forward as the sport.
Keith, I'm glad you mentioned that, and Tom, I'll throw it over to you, but what did some of these guys who were maybe a little bit older than you mean to you guys? I mean, it sounds like they were kind of rough on you in the room, but at the end of the day, and from us having them on the show, they talked about you guys and how intimidating you were, as the younger guys.
You know, and it gets, you know, I can, you know, I'm, when it comes to my, you know, the athletics, you know, that I experience, I can get pretty emotional about it. Just, you know, I guess when you're younger, right, you feel like you're being bullied. Right. And I guess you would call that, but maybe you call it bullying today. I think back then, right, it was their way of toughening you up, whether you agree with that or not. Mm-hmm. That's for somebody else to determine. But for me, as I've gotten older, I've realized what they were doing. I don't think they did it intentionally. I don't think they were trying, but they were able to do it. I don't say be mean to us, but they were able to, you know, bully us or make us tougher just enough so that we could handle, right, the pressure of wrestling at that time period. And what's amazing is, and again, it's heartfelt, is how I couldn't believe how supportive they were after they had graduated. That's the neat thing. You know, to have them call you up, this is before cell phones and Facebook and all that, to have them call you up and congratulate you. This is after they've graduated.
That's pretty cool.
Who'd ever thought Joe Teleski would call anybody? you know, and who would ever thought, you know, and Dan Jenkins, you know, God rest his soul, but who would have thought he would have watched us in the stands after he had lost a heartbreaking match in sectional finals or semis, I think it was. But, you know, and here he is, the toughest guy in the room at the time. And here he is supporting us. And so those are the kinds of things that, you know, that really, you know, kind of drive home. You know, we supported each other, but in our own awkward macho man way, I guess, you know, and it's the only way to explain it. But it is, it's something neat, you know, to have seen and have experienced. And I'm extremely thankful for that.
Carl, I wanted to ask you this before we jumped on. You know, Tom had said that Coach K was kind of a lion tamer with all the different personalities he had in the room.
I would say that's a true statement.
What was it like when you heard that Norwich was going to get this new wrestling coach, a guy that maybe was from out of the area? What was the vibe back then?
Well, I, you know, like I said to you, Nate, it was kind of interesting. And that's back in, you know, the 70s, the early 70s. But I know that the general word on the street, as far as, you know, I came from Sherburn, so we had a rivalry that was unparalleled. You know, it was amazing. The gyms would sell out, and it'd be crazy when Sherburn and Norwich wrestled. But, of course, here is Coach K, who come in from New Jersey. He has Polish ancestry. I don't want to be throwing names in around the calling him a Polak, but I will. He, you know, hey, how can he, is he going to adjust to upstate New York? Is he going to be able to do what some of the other great Norwich coaches like Joe Clark, like Sam Elia, like Frank Giltner, all those people who a long, long time ago developed wrestling in Norwich and did a fantastic job. And I don't think Coach K disappointed anyone. He was a fabulous coach. I am president of the Upstate New York chapter of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, and Coach K is a Hall of Famer, and he was also a member of our board, and he was very, very, very much respected, and all of his insights were greatly appreciated by our organization.
Yeah, a fantastic man, and I've only known Coach K the last few years since I've been, you know, covering more sports here in Norwich, and he's this nice, sweet, polite guy who always comes up and shakes my hand, has something nice to say. And you guys talk about him in the tiny wrestling room here, which we've talked about and we've had on video, that the veins popping out of his forehead and that he can really maybe have a bit of a temper. Keith, what do you remember from Coach in some of those tough, hot practice days?
Well, I can tell you a quick story that probably probably wasn't, you know, today's day would not look well. But I had I didn't start wrestling. I mean, I tried it in peewees for a very short time, and it wasn't for me. And then I remember I had moved to the school district. I had been in the school district, and then third grade moved to a private school locally. And then I came back in eighth grade. And Mr. Funk had worked hard, and Mr. Teleski in the middle school to try to get me to wrestle. In eighth grade, I wrestled half a year modified, half a year JV. My freshman year, I went in, and I'm telling you, our circle was unreal between Pruitt. Oh, my Lord, that man was made with arms. And Sam Reifenberg would just smile at you when he tortured you. And Dan Jenkins. And then, of course, the three of us. And, of course, we had an amazing coach that loved to torture us, and Mr. Elger.
Yep.
And he had a short thumb made to prod you when you retired. And I was very young and very, very frustrated. And I was getting pummeled. And they had to split. We had so many kids in the room that they had to split us lights and heavies, because when we got going, we cleared a room. Mm-hmm. And that room, as you said, you spoke of the pictures and the video that you've had, and that room is tight, and it gets hot. And for us heavies, for the ones that have to lose weight, you had to have it hot, and it was hot. So I quit. I ran out the door and quit. And I don't know how the man did it, because he was up by the chalkboard. He caught me at the door. There was always a tape board in the door. Tape board in the door went missing quick. And he had me, and he turned me around, and he explained to me in a very, very abrupt and respectful manner that quitting was just going to be the start of everything I would ever quit for the rest of my life, my family in the future, my school work, college, you know, jobs, and everything. And he had me in tears. I was already there anyways, but he was an amazing man at bringing life as an aspect, wrestling as an aspect of life, and where it was going to go. And the man was, and you talk about his energy and his veins sticking out. I mean, he was energized. And he put a point across that when I got done, I wanted to hug the man. He wouldn't let me back in the wrestling room. He told me to go home, get the showers, go home, and I better see you tomorrow. But that's just the type of man Coach K was to me, is that he wanted me to be the most successful person in the world, not just the best wrestler, but the best person I could be, and to take pride in everything I did. And that's his energy and where his frustrations. I mean, I frustrated him a lot. I'll never forget when I didn't make weight for Windsor, the Windsor tournament. And
not a good thing.
He was not happy with me. So, but yeah, but those guys, his energy with me was always a life lesson. And to this day, and I constantly use it, and my kids have seen him in the weight room, can put a face with the name that I've used so many times for these, you know, these puns or these, you know, these comments that he's made over the years.
How did that hit you in that moment? Because here we are so many years later and you're talking about that story. Do you remember how it hit you in that moment standing in the doorway? Like, were you like, oh, this guy, whatever, I'm going to go home? Or like, did it really sink in that moment?
Oh, it really sink in. He doesn't give you a choice. I mean, this guy,
sink him in.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's 200 pounds of nothing. I mean, he's soaking wet 125 pounds, yeah. But he can hit you like you're, you're like Tom Stoddard, double takedown on you with his head right in your chest. But the thing with it, that moment was, shut up, listen. The man was a legend in front of your eyes, you know, and it, for me, you know, every coach has a different, you know, take with every, you know, athlete or student. And for me, Coach K was a person that just hit home for me the day I met him, because, you know, you knew that he owned a farm, you knew he split wood, you knew that his family meant a lot to him. And he portrayed that, you know, through his classes in school. And he was somebody that you respected immediately for me. And I watched him, as Tom and spoke of, that we had a very diverse culture. And you watched him treat everybody the same. As long as you were willing to make Norwich Wrestling better, he was willing to very much put as much time into that situation. So in that moment, it was shut up and listen. Mm.
Tom, did you ever have a similar moment with Coach where, you know, he would get on you or anything like that?
I think the big thing with me, I think I frustrated him a lot because I obviously want to win dual meets, and, you know, that's always a focus. But I think I frustrated him early because I refuse, with the sport of wrestling, right? There's three phases, you know, top, bottom, neutral. And I hated wrestling on the mat. I hated it. And I just didn't enjoy, I'd rather be on my feet. And it was funny, we were talking about this, because about 2 hours ago, I just got done talking to him in the weight room. And he said, and this is, you know, again, this is just like it was yesterday, but he allowed me, right? So he might have grabbed Keith by the nape of the neck. But with me, he allowed me to, you know, he kind of said, listen, I'm going to let you be you, right? I'm not going to try to... Right. I know, Coach Alger is going to want you, Coach Alger voice, I want you to rip his face off, Tommy. But the thing is I just, it wasn't me. I didn't go out to try to rip your face off. I went out to try to take you down 100 times. And so, and that, you know, I know that frustrated Coach Alger to no end, you know, and I know they wanted team points. But, you know, I remember, I guess one of the big things that, many, I could give you a gazillion, but one of the big things in high school that he did was that he allowed me to be myself. He allowed me to stick with what I did well. And he didn't try to make me into something I wasn't. And, you know, I wasn't a pinning machine. Keith was a pinning machine. I wasn't a pinning machine. And so, and that's what was the nice thing about Coach K. He let me wrestle the way I wanted to wrestle.
Carl, do you remember having either of these two guys, a match, refereeing, anything like that from those years? Because I'm curious what your take was as being on the mat with them, as close as you can get.
Well, of course, I remember everything about it. No, I truly do. And I remember Tom had a blast double that was out of sight. Keith rode with a certain tenacity and was, very, very, very determined. And I had the greatest respect for Coach K. Occasionally, Coach K didn't have much respect for me. There were plenty of times in which he was probably a little disenchanted with this call or that call. And usually he wasn't very hesitant about letting me know. And once in a while, it wasn't too pleasant. But I was always able to rebound from it because I don't think many things bother me a whole lot as an official. But Coach K, he let me know, you know, hey, you know, get with it, whatever. But no, but both of these guys, all three of those guys, I'm telling you, they were just, they were murder's row. I, as a coach, when I think back, I wouldn't want to have to face those three guys at the end, you know, coming down to who is going to win the match. And you put it in those hands because each of those guys were always up to the challenge. And they wrestled with tenacity. They wrestled with a little bit of swagger. So you know that they had that edge that you have to have in order to be champions. Each and every one of these guys are champions. Champions that Coach K helped develop. But I think each of them are special, and they all had that special thing. And what can you say? You can't coach that. It comes from within them, and they have hearts of lions.
Carl, you know so much about, you know, Section 3 and Section 4 and New York State wrestling and the history of it. What was the 90s like? You know, today, as we were talking about before we jumped on, kids wrestle all year round, and maybe they specialize in the sport. How were things back in that era? It seems like we've had a lot of good wrestlers from all over the place during that time, and I'm just curious your take on kind of maybe some of the guys that these guys had to face day in and day out.
I would say that the competition back then was great. I mean, I would almost bet that these guys never went into a match going, I've got an easy match tonight. They went into the match knowing that they had a tough match and they had a job to do, and that job was to win. And one of the things that I see that is I think is significant is we have almost two different extremes in wrestling today in Section 4 and Section 3. We have elite wrestlers who are great, who are really tremendous wrestlers. And then we have on the other set or on the gamut here, those that aren't. We're missing a middle class where those wrestlers on given nights,
these guys, that's what you're talking about here.
On a given night, one of those guys can take the best wrestler in Section 4 and beat him. And we don't have that now. That middle class wrestler who can beat that elite guy on a given night. We're just lacking it, and I don't know the reason why. Maybe because it's such a tough sport, and you're getting just some of the elite athletes out, and then some of those guys who are attempting to learn the sport. And I give them the greatest amount of credit for wanting to wrestle. But we are missing that little piece there. But for these guys, when they wrestled, I'd say most of the teams were fairly strong, and you knew you were in a war.
Tom, you had mentioned it before, kind of what Carl was talking about, that you guys didn't wrestle in the off season, but like you came together, everybody was solid on the team, and that's just what you did.
Yeah, that could be like a mini study. You know, if someone's interested in doing that, that would be a nice, you know, kind of a to see maybe, you know, Carl was saying is that we have such a parity, right? You have really elite, or maybe kids are not so elite. Back then, you know, we didn't wrestle year round. I would wrestle hay bales with Keith. But seriously, the most, and I've said it before, I mean, most kids had jobs in the summertime, and you didn't wrestle year round. Some kids did. I know that. And I would think at least for Norwich anyway, you didn't see, you know, I know Kevin Slater didn't wrestle year round, Dan Jenkins didn't wrestle year round, but yet you know, as Carl was saying, you know, the neat thing is those kids could go out on any given night. You know, our very own superintendent did that one night. And forgive me, I can't remember the kid's name from UE. I don't know if you remember, but when Scott Ryan, he was one of those kids that came out of nowhere and beat.
Yeah.
I can't remember the kid's name from UE. But, I mean, that set the place in pandemonium. I mean, that was pandemonium. Because Mr. Ryan, Scott Ryan was just a little puppy at the time, and he beats this number one seed, number four in the state kid, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that was that, you know, that's, again, that's how I best describe that, you know, the Norwich wrestling teams.
Keith, is farm strong a real thing? I mean, I look here at you guys, and you talk about throwing hay bales and those type of things, and I know you today. When I'm going to see you at a game and Keith's coming over, you know you're getting the bear hug, the bear claw is going to grab you, you know? So, I mean, is that where you guys got some of that strength, that functional strength was on the farm?
Well, I would actually yield a lot of that question to Tom, as he is a huge lifting coach for my kids and other kids in Norwich, and he can tell you, and Mr. Bennett, if you shared with him, he'd tell you there's a huge difference. I believe, and even in this time, you know, kids were painting houses. Kids were, you know, it was, you know, I was blessed at the time. I didn't feel I was, but to do farm work. And I had, you know, friends like, you know, Tom and a really good friend of ours that we're still very close to, Mike Blennis, that was very, very helpful around the farm. So they got some exposure to that. I lived it, sleeped it, eat and dreamed. And, you know, I did wrestling as a way of getting out of farming. That was my break. That's why I started wrestling, was to get out of doing chores.
Get away from your old man.
Yeah.
I know.
Don Sherlin's had a farm, and he had a ceramic silo over there, and we had our heifers in that place. And that was my job for school and nights, was to throw corn silage out. And I would thought that if I started wrestling, I wouldn't have to do that. Well, it was there when I got done. But I turned it into a weight loss program. And with wrestling and with farming and having to lose weight, I remember my junior and senior year, the YMCA was promoting health and fitness, and they came and did a body check. And that was back before they were getting into pinching body fat and all that stuff. Well, right now I would lose big time, but but I remember testing 5% body fat at the time, and you know, these guys used to call me Solo Flex,
and he believed me. You wanted everyone to know.
Well, fat for it, you got to own it. So, but
we never had a shirt on.
Yeah.
Ever.
So I think that a lot of that time frame, when we ask, you know, these kids didn't wrestle. You know, these kids had summer jobs like Tom had spoke of, and I had mine obviously, but you know, there was kids on ladders painting houses and doing summer jobs, and I just think that wrestling, you know, is a lot of technique, but I think that, you know, some of the strength has a lot to do with it.
Keith, where did the name the Three Bears come from? Do we have any idea? I feel like the first group didn't give us a good answer.
I actually thought it was brought up in the paper. I actually think the paper actually threw that out there. Is that, and if it wasn't them, then it was Mr. K in an interview by the paper that, you know, that it come up that way. And I actually, when they did the dedication to Mr. K, I listened to Carl, and they had put a video together, I think Rhett had done, and it put me in tears. And I thought they had done that so well, and Carl had spoke so nicely. And it is the Three Bears. I believe that it was an article that it put in. And
something tells me it might have been Scott Ryan's dad.
Maybe.
Might have been him. I'm not sure.
I don't know. But for me, that's where I think it come from. You know, I remember I missed out with these guys my junior year, getting ready for states. I blew my ACL out. I didn't know that at the time. That was before ACLs were a big thing. And so we went to Cornell at we called the airplane hangar, and it was cold always up there. But you know, I had to discontinue after my first match. My senior year, getting to go with these guys, it was kind of nice. You know, I'll never forget Dan Jennings. We're sitting in English, or Mr. Sapensky's class, mm-hmm. and up front. And Dan was a good artist, And he drew me in a wheelchair, you know.
You know, he did. He would draw pictures of us getting beat, you know.
Yeah, just,
and, I mean, or it us was, in ambulances yeah. and stuff like that and show them to us, yeah. you know.
So it was – I'm telling you, I could tell the stories I tell the kids all the time. I just had a recent conversation with another kid. My kid and him, they go at it every time they get on a basketball court. They go at it. And I just told him. I said, you know, iron sharpens iron. And I'm telling you, it was our junior year. Maybe it was our senior, but I think it was our junior year. We all just had to come to the realization that when you step in the door, it's all business. And when you step out the door, you go to the locker room, it has to be friends or it has to be acquaintances. It has to be a different mindset. I'm telling you that we didn't have the numbers as we did when we first started, but we had some good numbers. But you had to clear out the room when Tom, Dan, and I went at it. It was bruises, it was blood, and it was sweat. Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, I'm telling you, Tom could sweat. I'm telling you, we would go, there's no throwing Tom, if I even tried to. But we would just battle. And most of the time you walked out mad, you were mad at yourself for maybe not being able to complete something. My goal was not to get freight trained by him, but you just went at it and you went at it. You bled, you sweat, and it just made you better for the next one because there was no, you weren't wrestling somebody else in the section better than your own teammate.
Tom, from your perspective, what were those days like in the room? Because, you know, we've heard Keith talk about it and, apparently you're the Incredible Hulk here. So,
well,
is that how you viewed yourself?
You know, so just, you know, here's real quick before I answer that. I'm going to tell you right now why farming, I wish, you know, I've said it for years. You know, I'm a big proponent of the weightlifting, obviously to make kids faster and stronger and all that. That you have to be faster and stronger to be, you know, to play good athletes, but there's nothing that replaces farming in my mind. Right. I say it all the time that wrestling started to go downhill. Sports started going downhill in general when we started going to round bales, right? We started going to because I'm telling you, and I mean to this day, I believe it. When you throw hay all day, right? You have an edge and you're angry, and you get in the wrestling room, and I'm telling you, you don't have the patience, you know. And there's an edge there, and I tell you what, I wouldn't want to wrestle an angry farmer. I'm telling you. I mean, it's. And to this day, you know, size of his hands, you know, and so, you know, that's my piece on that. I'm just saying, I wish there was more farms because I really do believe that farming and wrestling go hand in hand. I really do believe that. But yeah, the wrestling room, I can't, it's hard to explain, you know, out of the wrestling room, Dan and I and Keith were inseparable. You know, Dan was the clown. Try to keep Keith in my head screwed on because Keith and I were nervous Nellies. You know, we barely smiled, right? But Dan would try to pick on us, you know, to keep us level-headed. But in the wrestling room, it was. I'm telling you, and we tried to paralyze each other. There's no other way. We set each other up for it. You know, if anybody knows about wrestling, standing switch, right? You start running, right? Because you want to hit a standing switch. We try to time it right so we'd hit the guy into the wall. I mean, it was that. I mean, we tried to, and it just. You know, and Coach K, I swear he knew what was going on, and he wouldn't stop it, right? He'd stop it once in a while. He'd break it up just enough before someone got permanently disabled, you know. But, you know, of course he would smile at that. But it was brutal, you know. And but like he said, once we got outside the wrestling room door, you know, it was fine.
Carl, when the folks here at Norwich approached you about speaking – about Coach K and his program. What went through your mind when they first asked you, and what did you think about when you prepared to give that speech?
Well, you know, I've known Coach and Coach K as a coach. My teams competed against him. I know Coach K as a person. I know him as a Hall of Fame member. I know him as a board member. And I was absolutely humbled and honored to be able to say a few words on his behalf. I just like to piggyback off one of their comments, and that is that usually if you see one kid at a certain weight who's really good, you can usually tell that there's going to be the kid above him and the kid below him in weights are going to be fairly tough, because in that wrestling room, in order to survive, and I think that these guys will agree with me, they have to be tough. They have to get better because they want to compete against that guy. So, you know, when Tom and Keith and Dan were representing Norwich, you knew that each night in that room, competing, drilling, working with each other, and learning from each other, because I bet that they taught each other some important aspects of wrestling in that room. So it was kind of natural to see those three guys together in that group, because one was a little heavier, like Dan, and then Tom, and then Keith. And I feel sorry for Keith.
You don't have to.
Because I do now. I didn't then.
I can tell you that as wrestlers, they were brutal. They were tough. And I think it made Keith a whole lot better. But I think Keith got a couple things in, a couple good blows here and there.
Carl, I'm curious to kind of take it out a little bit broader with your experience. Of course, being Sherburn and Sherburn Earlville, knowing Norwich, being at Oxford, your time there, what is kind of this Route 12 wrestling community all about? Because it's a lot of great programs. We've had a lot of great grapplers go through here, go on to do great things in college and beyond. What does this kind of, you know, 12, 15, 20-mile radius mean to you?
No, I think it means, and I just don't think it's up the Shenango Valley with Oxford and Norwich and Sherburn. I think that in this area, we had some excellent coaches. I think in this area, we have a history, a strong and rich history of wrestling, and that promotes the sport a great deal. And then probably the most important thing is you have kids like Keith and Tom and other great wrestlers throughout that this whole county area. And I think our press back then, Tom Rowe and some of those guys did a tremendous job promoting and highlighting, showcasing wrestling. And we had, you know, the Clyde Cole, hey, this is a big tournament. And all of us, when all of us competed against each other, wow. You know, back in the 60s, there were wild matches between Sherburn and Norwich. I mean, you know, it was crazy. That's all I can say.
Nate, I got to say that, you know, I reffed with Carl. And
yes.
I got to add that, you know, I think that as much, a lot of our success in Section 4 has a lot to do with our reffing. And as I learned this on the other side, I mean, I think everybody needs to ref. Because you're between two teams and a spotlight and two wrestlers and a lot of experts in the stands.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I learned a lot on the other side. And I have to say I was blessed and successful, and I had a lot of mentors like Carl and John Shields.
Thank you very much.
But I'm going to tell you that I learned in that aspect of reffing that not only you know, you've got to make some tough decisions, obviously, instantly, but you're getting ready. You're getting your section or your area that you're reffing in ready for the states, you know, because it's out of area. Because, you know, if you're taking it easy or if you're not calling it at the book, these kids are going to go and get shocked by a different, because you're going to see some other refs. You're going to see some other competition. So I think reffing has a lot. We had two excellent chapters. I could go on and on that I learned a lot in the few years that I put in. I think 7-8 years of reffing that I did. Refs have a lot to do with it. People don't realize it.
Carl, I wanted to ask you this earlier, and we kind of got off, but how do you deal with everything that officials have to deal with? And I see it. I don't know if it's always been this way, but I've been noticing it more and more the last few years in all sports that I cover. But as Keith said, the experts in the stands really getting on you, and coaches getting on you, and no one is ever happy with an official, it seems. How, over the years, have you dealt with that? Is it just thick skin? What is it for you?
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a little bit thick skin, but I think it's also what made these guys champions. You know, they got those characteristics that made them champions. And I think that a lot of officials have the same characteristics, and they just carry it on over into the mat as officials. As much as sometimes Coach K wasn't happy with me, I bet he was pretty happy to see me walk through the door.
Yes, I bet he was. Yeah.
So I'll just let it go by that. But I appreciate Keith's input as far as officials are concerned. But I think by far the most important thing is we had these guys, you know, these studs that were out there. They all wear short sleeve shirts, you know, and I got great big long sleeve shirts on. Because I don't have the guns those boys have.
I know.
I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, me too. I got my long sleeves on here. So.
I cover my body up.
Carl, what was it like working with Keith and maybe other athletes that you had seen on the mat, and then they, you know, transition into becoming an official kind of in the next phase of their sports life? But specifically for Keith, what was it like kind of being a mentor to him a little bit?
I think I was a mentor to you, don't you think?
I would agree.
I think I can't even tell you what a great feeling it is to see some of these people that you've worked with become very, very good officials. And I think Keith was one of them, but there are a lot of other people. And all of a sudden, these people who were wrestlers and who might not have liked you on certain nights are now working with you. It's just like wrestling. What these guys competed, and they competed hard, but when they went back to wrestling, and when wrestling was all over and they went back to the locker room, hey, they were buddies, they were friends. And there's so much relationship between wrestling and officiating and so on and so forth. You have to be a certain person. And, hey, it's something that I think that a lot of times is just born in you. I think each of these guys are perfect examples of, you know, that mental toughness that you need. And you have to be mentally tough.
I think it's a sorority or, you know, wrestling is something that just not everybody can do. I mean, it takes, like he said, a certain toughness. And the thing that I think back, you know, I went on and wrestled in college. Tom went on, played football in college and was extremely successful. We both came back to coaching. I coached against Tom. I reffed on Tommy's mats when he was in deposit. So, it was a great, you know, community, and, you know, and Ronnie Borner and those guys, yep. And John Shields, the guys that reffed me. And then when we went and reffed together, it was just so much fun, and just to learn the aspect on the backside. And what these guys are doing for referees is to give these are memories that they're messing, you know, that they're dealing with on a daily basis. You know, a whistle here, a call there but these guys have thick skin. They're calling it like they see it. And I used to remember Carl just never was rattled. He was never got uncomfortable, was always smooth, had the long whistle. You knew he was blowing it. And whether you're working for him or wrestling under him, he was, it was a great thing. But it always comes back around. Wrestling is just a family, and it seems to be, it kind of flourishes as it keeps going, and you want to give back to it.
Tom, I was going to ask you, you know, these guys with officiating, but you for coaching, what did wrestling do for you as you transitioned into the next phase of your sports life, and now you're leading young men? How has it affected you?
I think, you know, I've taken, not an expert by any means in anything, but one thing I think, if I can be, I'm pretty good at using the things that I learned from Coach K and Coach Buda, applying those things to today, coaching. You know, I think the big thing that I do is I treat kids, how those two guys treated me, and right. That tough love aspect, How to get under a kid's skin, but at the same time, building a relationship with the kid. I've learned over the years and even today, right? I've been coaching for a gazillion years now, various sports, and I use the same things, the same qualities. I'm not going to list them all, but I use the same ideas that they used with me. And kids, if I may be a little bit, sometimes they say the Stoddard magic, right? As far as like getting kids to come out to sports, getting kids to be motivated, getting kids into the weight room, right? So over the years, I've kind of built this little, I'm not sure how long it's going to last. It could end tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. I'm no fool, right? And I know I'm getting older. I've been told before I have a little Stoddard magic as far as getting under kids' skin and getting them motivated. And all I'm doing is just doing the same things that Coach K and Coach Bluta did. And it's no secrets, And so we'll see how long I can take it.
So Keith, I'll ask you first and then I'll ask Tom. And I've learned from doing my show for a couple of years now that some athletes have that memory where they can remember every second of everything. And other people, I call it like sports amnesia. They don't remember anything about a match or a game. It's like they almost blank out and they're just in the moment and then they win and then they come back. So I'm curious for you two guys, sectional championships, trips to states, team championships, what is the memory for you that maybe sticks out the most or is your favorite? And then we can go to Tom after that.
So I have two, not of the same sport. One is with football, when the community loaded in buses and cars and followed us to the U of R for our – it was last year before they went to state championships in football. That was an incredible moment. Aaron Giltner was a – he went to school there. So him and his, some of his friends had put on us a spaghetti dinner like mm-hmm. we'd normally had. And, the community, I'll never forget Mr. Pluta calling the timeout. We all coming off and I'm getting goosebumps. The people, the ride home, the people that came out, it's an amazing. So now I'm going to advance to the wrestling thing. And unfortunately, states wasn't a great thing for me. It was an opportunity that I'm very blessed that I had, but they had the war memorial was down. They were doing some construction, so we went across the street to the On Center. Yeah. Oh, so it was okay. It was not what Tom and Dan had portrayed that it was going to be. It was just a big laid out thing. I don't think people could see well. It was a makeshift place to go the year I went. It was a great memory. But for me, Briggs was my big competitor that year. I don't know how many times we wrestled, but it felt like five times. we battled back and forth. I got the best of them all but once. I knocked him out in Norwich in our dual meet.
Knocked him out?
Yeah, we shot the same time. I got lower than he did, and he was unable to continue wrestling. I will never forget. I mean, we were at that time, it was VHS tapes, you study, that was coming in. Visualization was a big part of the psyche of wrestling and stuff at that time. And I remember just studying. And of course, at that point, I had gotten beat the week before or 2 weeks prior to that for stacks by him. So you're second guessing everything. I was again, still had, was wearing a brace from the ACL from a year prior, second guessing everything, and it was, you're trying to wrestle through that. I remember the win. I remember coming off Tom and Dan, because we had made many jokes in classes about whether we were going or not going and what we were going to run through and what we were going to have to deal with. I wanted to go so bad because of the year before I didn't get to, get to finish. And I remember after the win, they'd given me a big hug and I sprinted off the mat and my dad caught me midair and drew me out of the air. And there's many photos of that. Just him being proud of me because he had worked so hard, and it was hard for him to, to make matches.
Anybody had any idea how hard it was to make Rich Evans happy. Rick Evans happy.
So
I know where Keith is coming from.
So it was a moment that was extremely special for me, and you know, it was just those are moments that were just absolutely awesome. And I had a sister that was second to none in support for me in sports and what I did. And my sister was very smart, very athletic herself, but she always put me at the top.
Tom, what about for you in your times? I mean, I'm always curious to talk to guys who get to that last match, the match that everybody wants to get to, and you know, you get second in the state, and as Carl said, it's only one division, and you know how that sinks in.
Yeah,
back then and today.
You know, I talk about sports amnesia. I don't remember any of my matches hardly. I remember, you know, the only ones I remember are Tom Richards from Waverly. I wrestled him 5 times, and
Todd Taft from Oxford.
You know, and each time I wrestled him, the score would get closer. You know, and so you know, so those kinds of matches I remember and stuff like that. But I think if you want to talk about memories, like stuff that's seared in my brain, and I guess it, you know, a little bit emotional. But you know, here's a funny story. You know, talk about tough dads. I mean, you know, my father was my stepfather, but you know, I was with him my entire life, so I call him my father. His name was Bill Root. He wrestled back under Sam Ilya. And, you know, it's funny. You talk about tough. I, you know, chopping wood. We didn't have a wood splitter. So I was it. I was the wood splitter. And so in his way, you know, I was out splitting wood the day after sectional finals, right? My junior year after, you know, made the trip to States. And I'm not kidding you, you know. And my father, people, and he was a very loving man. But when it came to wrestling season, he was a different type of man. And so I'll never forget, I'm out chopping wood the next morning, right? I'm chopping wood, and I hear this. He never said, and I don't blame him for it. He didn't know how to congratulate me, right? He was never, you know, he didn't know how to congratulate my wins, right? He knew when I lost, he knew what to talk about. But not so much when I won. But anyway, long story short, I'll never, just one memory seared. I remember hearing the kitchen window slide open, and he's like, "Tom, nice job." Boom. You know, so there's that one, you know. Another one real quick that comes to my mind, just to something that kind of sticks, talk about coaching. When I graduated college, you know, I've told them all the story a million times. Everybody's going to roll their eyes, but I don't care. Coach Pluta, I was only given 4 tickets to get into, maybe he'll tell me now, but if he sees this. We had to have it indoors, I believe, because of the weather, my graduation from Hartwick College. And we only had so many tickets to give out. And so as I'm sitting there and listening to people join on, and I'm like looking around, I'm like, I couldn't believe I graduated. And I'm looking around, looking far corner of the auditorium, and there sits Coach Pluta and just gives me a thumbs up. You know, talk about emotional, right? Holy crow, this guy, haven't seen him in 4 years and whatever, I haven't seen him in forever. And here he is at my graduation. You know, and of course, the Coach K, you know, when I came off the mat after, you know, fortunately, I got to wrestle a future Olympian in the finals, States my senior year, and didn't go so well. And so I came off, you know, I'm okay. It took a second. But I came off the mat, and when I saw, looked at Coach K in the eyes, and all of a sudden I was 10 years old again, you know. And I'm like, I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I'm like, I couldn't believe it was over. I'm like, this is it with this guy, you know. I couldn't believe it, you know. And I fell into a heap, you know. I listened to everything this guy said to me for the last however many years, and I couldn't believe it was over, you know. And he just looked at me and gave me his Coach K smile. Nah, he knock it off. You're all right. He's chewing his gum. He's chomping. You're okay. Knock it off. You know. And another neat thing with Coach K too is he would call me as I was teaching, going into my teaching career. Son of a biscuit, if he didn't call me at weird times in the morning and ask me about teaching. Like, I'd get a phone call back down his answer machines, you know, and he'd be on my answer machine. Give me a call back. I want to know how your teaching going, you know. So here's these coaches are, you know, giving a rat's rear end about me, you know, after, you know, 5, 10 years after I've been done. So those are my memories.
And that's the good stuff. And yeah. I can understand, the more I've done the show, that's what people talk about is those things that aren't the moment of the state championship or a sectional final. It's more of like some little story along the way, and that's the good stuff. But who do you remember who you wrestled in the final, a future Olympian? Yes, I didn't know this.
Yeah, his name is Jason Gleason. A lot of people like to point that out. His name was Jason Gleason. He was from the Adirondack High School. And yeah, he went on to wrestle in the 1996 Olympics.
Wow.
You know, my claim to fame, you know, kids love, because I can't, this is one of the downsides of YouTube, but it's on YouTube out there. Don't YouTube it. Okay. But if you YouTube it, you'll see me get my rear end handed to me by this guy. He was tough, you know. But I always tell kids that my junior year, I was beating him going into the third period. So, you know, I wrestled him twice, and I did better in my junior year against him than I did in my senior year.
Wow.
Yep. So that's pretty
neat. I think back in the day, though, everybody wanted to give Coach K his first state champion.
Oh, we tried so hard.
Everybody wanted.
We didn't care. We just
that
wanted somebody
to do it.
That
was a big conversation that we all had. We all wanted to. So, fortunately, those two for their junior year, and again for me and my senior year with both of them, you know, we had that disappointment in our losses. But we also had the disappointment.
That's what I felt worse about when I lost.
That we didn't give him.
I felt so
we
horrible.
Didn't match that goal for him because that man put in so much time.
We felt horrible every time we lost. You know, we didn't give him that opportunity. That was the most horrible feeling, is that we couldn't give that to him. That's what I felt when I walked off the mat. I was like,
yeah. Because I felt like that was the one thing he lacked in his repertoire. You know, that's one thing that he needed to complete the book when he decided to call it a day, that's what he needed. And that we didn't give it to him.
I'm trying to think now in all my research, did he have one during his career?
Joe was the only one that came second, right? No, he took a bunch of seconds, thirds, and fourths, right? Joe Downey, and he got injured. Yep. He was number one in the state when he got injured. And that was the last state chance at a state champion, I believe. Yeah. Yep.
And now Norwich has been so blessed these last 10 or 15 years.
Goodness. Mm.
And that's what our plan is for the third episode of this three-part series, is to bring in Frankie and Dante and Tristan and some of those guys and talk about the new era of champions. Of course, we just did a episode here in the studio with Maverick, talking about his state championship, which was so great to hear. A young guy getting it done and what the future might hold for him. So just a lot to talk about with Norwich Wrestling.
Absolutely.
But that had to be tough to want that so bad for Coach K and not be
horrible.
Able to get it. So, but, you know, we can't go much farther without, you know, we've talked about the Three Bears. But, Keith, unfortunately, one of you guys is not here. And, you know, it's tough. What's it like for you and for Tom to lose one of your brothers in Dan and not have him here as you look back and reminisce on these things?
So Dan and I had a unique relationship. Coming in from the private school, actually Tommy and I had struggled as well when we first got together. Dan and I definitely had struggled. I was a farm kid from a Christian school. And it was, you know, my mom worked in the guidance department in high school. It was a different, you know, setting for me. We had built a relationship as time went on. But in school, we'd grown, you know, we grew as we got together. I'll never forget. I don't know why we were together in a vehicle, but we're headed out Midland Drive. And I remember Dan, you know, he was always a jokester. And at one time, I actually saw him be sober, and he looked at me and he said, "I think that this is part of the reason why, you know, I struggle with you is because I refuse to know you, and I refuse to understand that you're, you know, growing up and how much that faster you had to grow as a, you know, as a young adult faster." And he was able to do that. So we got to know each other a lot more as I was going out of the high school. But as a wrestling, you don't have a choice. You know, you do it. You have no choice of whether you like somebody or you don't like somebody. And it wasn't that we didn't like each other. It's just that we had to learn to understand each other through different eyes. And Dan and I crossed paths through me reffing, him helping out different programs, me coaching, him helping out other programs. And we got to understand. And but the thing about Dan that I liked about Dan and this picture right here is the story of the whole thing, is that the minute that we came together, or I seen, this is him. I mean, there's no smile there, but that was, he was just seconds late from the snap of the photo. But Dan would laugh, and we talk about Dan drawing me in a wheelchair, you know, like this, you know, Roboto Man is what he used to call me too, with the, with my brace on that you can barely see in that photo. And but that was Dan. He would lighten the situation, as Tom said. We would be nervous Nellies when we were wrestling. He just lightened the mood. But to the fact, I'll never forget that a couple days prior to his passing, he was turning around at my place of employment, and he noticed me. He jumped out of the car. I stopped the truck, got out. We did, you know, high five. And then, you know, and again, I'm getting the goosebumps, you know, and then you hear he's gone a couple days later. I guess that's just the measure of him. And, you know, you just, once you lose, you know, one of your soldiers that you've been fighting through life, through high school, you know, wrestling is, you know, is a battle in a spell. Sports, you know, it wasn't just that. It was football as well. And we battled next to each other. That just all of a sudden, that when you lose a teammate or a classmate like that, and that he had so much integration with your life and your sports aspect, that once you lose somebody like that, you know, part of it, a piece of you dies, you know, a piece of it goes. And so it's, you know, the old memories start rolling. You start going through it, and you just realize that, you know, you never have that high five again. You never have those words, that smile, that joke. So it's very, very hard. And of course, you know, when you lose a family member, it brings back those situations with many of those people you've lost.
Tom, for you, how do you sum it up? And I know it's not an easy thing to do. But again, as Keith said, he's one of your brothers that you went to battle with day in and day out.
Yeah. Dan. Oh, Dan and I had a history. You know, people couldn't say one name without saying the other. We see, you know, Keith and I, if people say that now. I mean, I know we're all old now and stuff, but people would say that about Keith and I and our best friend, Mike Bunnis. But in high school, you couldn't say Tom Stoddard without saying Dan Jennings. Couldn't say Dan Jennings without saying Tom Stoddard athletically. Dan has a special place in my heart. Gosh darn, he would just pick on us, unbearable at times. But at the same time, you know, he just, something about him. I think he was a lonely soul. You know, in high school, he would seek me out in the mornings. You know, here he is, this popular kid. You know, he had all the latest fashions. He was, you know, the latest shoes and latest everything. He always had to have the best of the best, you know, and laugh with everybody and be that. But then, I don't know why, but he would seek me out in the morning to walk the hallways. And I don't know why. And I knew why. We were wrestling, but I just, you know, he enjoyed that company that we would have the last 15 minutes before the day began. So we did that our junior and senior year quite a bit. You know, we just made each other better. I don't know how to describe it. And he, and later on, after we graduated and all that stuff, and, you know, he would tell me, I was always trying to make you better. You know, go back to, if you want to go back to the beginning of this session, when we talk about, you know, the unbelief that some of these tough guys could, I didn't think that they cared, and they did. You know, and I didn't know Dan had a heart, and he did. And he did. He had a huge heart. And so, yeah, I was floored. I had the opportunity to coach his daughter, and I stayed close with Dan up until about a year before he passed away. But it was tough, you know. If you want to, kind of a, not a best friend love, but if there's another name for it, let me know, because I don't know what it is. But whatever you want to call it, that's what it was.
Yeah, it seems like no matter what, all the high school stuff that you talk about with picking on each other and all of that, but it seems like you guys shared something that goes way beyond all that, and you'll always be connected no matter what for all the time you spent together. So
When you're trying to run each other through a concrete wall, it drives a love that has no choice.
Anything is,
because anything outside of the wrestling room, you go to jail for.
Yeah. You know, you can't, you know.
Oh, my well, as we hit the home stretch here, Carl, you know, I wanted to bring you back in. This era, this team, a special time. And do you think we'll see teams like this again in the future? Is wrestling in a different place now? I'm just so curious because you've seen so many things. You're a historian of everything in Section 4 and New York State. Will we see eras like this again?
Well, you know, I'm a positive guy, and I hope that some of these things that you're doing with podcasts and so on will be some inspiration to some of the future generations, and that they will follow these folks as far as models are concerned. They certainly are great role models. Listening to these guys talk, it's interesting because so often we see them as these big mountain men
yeah.
people, and now we're seeing such an interesting aspect of them, aren't we? We're seeing how human they are. We're seeing how grateful they have been, how they felt for Coach K and for everything that the Norridge school system has given them. We see them showing the brotherhood of the sport, but just like any sport, there's brotherhood, and it moves them together. You know, it's been quite uplifting just to hear these guys talk that way when the only thing you could think of is Tom Stoddard shooting a double leg on somebody and knocking him across the gym, for crying out loud, or the amount of pleasure that I got when I saw Keith develop into an outstanding wrestling official. It's remarkable to see another element of these guys than what I'm used to, rough and tough.
Yeah. It's my favorite part of doing these interviews with athletes from all sports yeah. is you get more than the 2 minutes post-game that you might get to talk to somebody for a regular interview, and you can kind of get into the stories, and that's my favorite part of it. But Carl, with your work with the Hall of Fame, is there anything that wrestling fans out there should know that the Hall of Fame does? Are there, and I'm curious about this too, resources, materials yeah. that we can dive into the history?
Well, yeah. Well, what we do is we have a pretty good, spent a whole lot of money getting all of the New York State finals digitized. So we have that. But each year we have a ceremony,
erase
and
mine.
We recognize the
Tom said we have to erase his.
Yeah, right. But I can't do that, Tom. But Jason Gleason was a pretty tough man. We recognize excellence as far as wrestling is concerned. Another main mission that we have as a group is to keep on to maintain, to sustain the rich heritage that we have for wrestling in this area and in upstate New York. There's two reasons why we have an upstate chapter and a downstate chapter, because if we didn't have an upstate chapter, there wouldn't be anybody in the Hall of Fame, because all the people in Long Island think that they're the ones who created wrestling, you know. So that's an interesting aspect of our state chapter. But I think that what we are also trying to do is to inspire future generations to wrestle and to get involved. But we like to think that we'd like to have encourage people to participate in all sports, because I think that they have so many life lessons that are so important. And I think these two guys just talked about so many of those life lessons that, and they represent that. And you couldn't get two better guys to represent, to be models,
Carl.
Yeah,
thanks.
I'm so glad that they're here. And I have one last question for each of you guys. Keith, I can't let you go without saying, you know, I've gotten to know you very well over the last couple of years. What is it like to have your kids be so into basketball? And you've become a basketball guy, but I'm always curious, like, hey, at your core, you're a wrestling guy. So what's that dynamic like in the wintertime?
Basketball is something that for me is my kids are doing something and being their own person.
Mm.
They're doing something different than me. You say, you know, my name, you know, my name's on the wall. I've been blessed with that and that the school has done that or, you know, coaches. And so wrestling is – people know me as wrestling. The difference is my kids are known for their sports and their thing. I have one son. Wrestling came up multiple times about him wrestling. Wrestling's a different sport now than it was when I was there. As we've spoke through this podcast about, you know, we didn't have the summer wrestling and the stuff that we did then. I didn't have the time to do that, with the farm and helping. But with the aspect that, you know, wrestling is you have to do it year round to be successful, to be an elite wrestler, as Carl spoke of. And it takes a special toughness. My wife coming from Gilbertsville, Mount Upton, had never really had much to do with wrestling.
Right. Yeah.
And as much as wrestling is tough, a mother has to be extremely tough. It is a lifestyle that is different than none other. You have to be able to watch your kid sit at a table and choose not to eat Thanksgiving dinner because you're during wrestling, or when you're supposed to be getting ready for the Windsor tournament and you're not eating. Should have stopped a day or two earlier. But or running in, you know, suits that are legal. But, you know, or doing whatever it took. That's the biggest thing. And in today's wrestling world is a different story with the way they've done, you know, they do the classifications and stuff. So wrestling is today is a different world. So that's the second part of it. Like I said, the first part is I wanted my kids to do their own thing. And then find their own avenues. And it's been unique because out of my three children, they've all chosen different avenues, but basketball has been the one that they're common. And the neat thing is my two oldest children, my daughters are tough as nails. Yes. Tommy will tell you they're tough as nails. So being him at the youngest and a mother that has not been a part of a wrestling, grow up, it's been very good for him to be a part of the basketball program. And Mr. Bennett from Norwich is done well for pushing him along, as well as Tommy and in his weightlifting. And he's becoming quite a unique kid. And but sports in general in Norwich are it's a blessing to see the community, you know, come and surround it like we had when we were younger.
I think your wrestling toughness has passed on to your kids, and they've taken it to other sports. So it lives on. It lives on. But, Tom, I'll wrap it up with you. What's it like for you, and you've had a journey, but to be around NHS, working with athletes, where it all started for you, to be back here, walking around the halls, how does that all mix together for you? How does that make you feel?
Well, the first thing is, Emily would have wrestled.
Oh, yeah. Don't mess with Em.
Okay.
No way.
And secondly, the second reason why his kids didn't wrestle is because he knows that he wouldn't survive. Right? Keith knows that he would be institutionalized, and he wouldn't be able to do it. So anyway, I gave you the real reason. So I think the neat thing for me, you know, I tell you what, Norwich is a unique community. Every small community is unique in its own way. One thing that I love and I'm very thankful for is the resurgence that the Reifenberg boys have brought to Norwich Wrestling. the last recent years. And, you know, that's nice. We got the rifle mix. That's what I used to tell people, right? And so that we kind of hang on to that. And, you know, you call it pride or what do you want to call it? But, you know, maybe too much pride. But so I listen, I don't give a rear end if a kid knocks out of the park from Norwich and Odyssey of the Mind. I'm going to hit like on Facebook. I'm going to love it. And I'm going to cheer him out in the hallway. I bleed purple. And so I'm always, and I always will. And I'll support any kid who does well. And so, you know, again, as I get older, it's harder and harder for me to pass on that love for purple and to try to pass it on to the younger generation. And I know that. But I tell you what, I do. And it's no matter what, I'll cheerlead anybody anyway that's wearing purple.
Your blood runs purple, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I cannot thank you guys enough for sitting down and doing kind of our part two of this three-part series, and I can't wait for the third, and just to go down memory lane with you guys and for being so open and honest, I appreciate it. So thank you to you guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Very much appreciated.
So that will wrap up episode 247 here on the Nate Lull Podcast of the Norwich Wrestling Reunion. It's part two of three. And again, you can watch this video on the Norwich Athletics YouTube channel. A huge thank you to them and to Rhett Janung, who is always running the controls for us, helping us put this together, setting up the studio. Honestly, if you're a Norwich community member or a sports fan, you guys have it really, really good here.
We really do with Rhett.
Yeah, I hope, please, hope please everybody appreciates him. That. So. All right, we'll wrap it up. Check back in the archives. We've had a lot of Norwich guests on. We've done the whole basketball series. We've talked football. We've talked wrestling, basketball, everything. So check back in the archives. We'll see you again soon on the Nate Lull Podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.